going on, FA Nation? Welcome back. Fantasy Alarms NASCAR DFS Podcast. I'm Dan Malin, joined by the FSWA three-time NASCAR Writer of the Year. Matt, how are you? What did you think of another chaotic, possibly even more chaotic, Indy road course race?
It was definitely chaotic. That's a very good name for it. I, again, only saw bits and pieces. I took my kids to the Omaha Zoo with some friends of ours on Sunday. Kind of checked out a little bit. Had to, you know, clear my head a little bit after the run we've had this summer. So, yeah, it was pretty nuts, to say the least. Tempers flared again. There were penalties given out, although I would contend that some drivers got away with stuff that other drivers didn't. And then we saw Hendrick throw their own driver under the bus at the end of the race, too, because Kyle Larson missed the turn and went full send and said he had a brake failure. And then, like, the day after the race, Hendrick came out and said, yeah, we didn't see any signs of failed brakes. I think our guy just got in there too hot. So that's not cool. But I don't know. Where are you on the discussion of should it go back to the oval or should we give the Roval another try? Or move it to IRP?
Well, here's my thought, is that I've always spoken highly of how much I love this road course. And I think it's because I mostly do most of my DFS research for the Xfinity series. And the Xfinity series seems like they tend to put on a good show at this track for the 3 years that they've been running. The first year was phenomenal. Even this year's great was still good, even though for DFS, it seemed like all my cord guys that I was overweight on, it seems like they were either like penalized in stage three or they had a flat go down or they got wrecked or something. So I was having a great day DFS-wise for Xfinity, and then ultimately took like a slight hit. But for the Cup Series, I think road course racing in general has been, I guess, slightly underwhelming. And as much as I love the road course, I wouldn't hate giving the next-gen car a shot on the oval. Now, I will say that there are still significant concerns about how narrow pit road is.
Yes. Well, the last time they raced the oval, we saw a 14-car wreck on pit road.
Exactly.
Was it Buescher or McDowell that spun at the start of pit road? It was one of them that spun at the start of pit road and backed like everybody else up.
Yeah, and then somebody, one crew guy got his like leg broken or something.
Yes,
because he was hit by a car on pit road.
Yeah.
So ultimately, I think if you want to improve the quality of racing, and I think the complaint now is that there are probably too many road courses on the schedule. So if they wanted to do an Indianapolis weekend where you have, you know, the trucks at IRP, because the IRP race was great. It was very entertaining. It was just solid racing. Keep the Xfinity series on the road course and then keep, or just move the Cup Series back to the oval. I'm fine with that. I have a very hard time imagining NASCAR would take the Cup Series out of Indianapolis Motor Speedway and move it to IRP.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that sentiment. Now, the only thing to keep in mind is that Indy also, like IndyCar, was also there this weekend and raced the road course. So the question, I guess, is can Indy flip the road, like flip it from the oval to the road course and back fast enough? Because I know that's the thing with Charlotte, right, is it takes a while to be able to flip it back to using the oval because you have to set up barricades so that they go, like, they don't just keep shooting down the straightaway. And at Indy Road, I know that they didn't really put up barricades, a.k.a. that's how you get the the full send in turn one that got Ross Chastain penalized. I don't know. We'll see. I don't really get the drivers going, well, it was a crown jewel race to be on the oval. Okay, but to me, it's not a crown jewel if you start racing it in 1996. Like,
that's fair.
Darlington started racing in the 60s. Right? The Coke 600 is a crown jewel because it's the longest race and it's been on the schedule since the 60s.
Yeah.
I don't see how the Brickyard 400 that just got on the schedule in my lifetime, in both of our lifetimes, should count as a crown jewel. And like, I get you want to race the oval because Indy races it, whatever. But Indy also races the road course, so that argument doesn't necessarily hold to me. So we'll see what they do. The 2023 schedule is supposed to be out in like a month, I think I heard. clearly Chicago is on there. That's going to suck. Road America's almost assuredly off. I think it's basically guaranteed that it's off the schedule, which also sucks.
Is that really the only change? Like, have they recommit? Have they said? Because I figured we would have heard an announcement or a rumor that the NASCAR was considering moving the Cup Series back to the Oval. I'm operating under the assumption that they're just back on the road course in 2023.
I'm pretty sure they said that they would run it in 2023.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Ganassi, who owns it, Penske owns it. Sorry, got the captain and Ganassi screwed up. Penske, I'm pretty sure, came out and said that they would be on the road course in 2023 because that's what the deal was. And then after that, they would discuss it.
That's going to be the case. Then next year's Indy road course is just a phenomenal race to really chase long shot bets.
That's true.
Because, I mean, so many Harrison Burton top 10, I think, was 34.
Top three. Yeah.
Yeah. And he finished third. Bubba top Toyota, which I luckily had exposure to, was 100.
By the way, you didn't get the best line on that.
I saw somebody get 150 to one on that.
I saw somebody get 5,000 to one or 500 to one on
that's
that.
Insane.
I don't know what book they used, but it had to have been a Tuesday bet when the lines first came out. And so, yeah, congrats on the $2,000, but sorry to make you feel bad that you didn't get five times more money on your bet.
Anyway, so I guess the other thing I wanted to talk about is, like, what is the DFS approach that we take the rest of the season? Because it's obviously been a very frustrating season DFS-wise with more variance than normal. And I have no shame in saying that I've really been scaling back what I've been playing on the Cup Series.
Same here.
This past week, I used some crowns to enter the $3 three-entry max contest, but I only played the Chrome Horn. I mean, and usually I'm into playing the $50 single entry, the $12, the $24, the $20 three entry. Like, I love throwing a lot of money at GPPs, but this year, I'm not bleeding my entire bankroll, but at the same time, it's like I just haven't had the hits, and I could blame the new car and tires falling off and all that crap, but it's just been a very frustrating year. And the contests on DK and the payouts, they only get worse from here on out with NFL coming back.
Right. That's also true because we're recording this on Friday morning. So the Hall of Fame game has already happened. So there you go. We got one NFL game in the books for the preseason. So I don't know. I feel like my research and my process has been good. I feel like for the most part, I have felt pretty good about the plays for most of the race. And then something happens. And I don't know. There's not really a way to factor that in, I don't feel like. I mean, maybe, there's some algorithm we could come up with that takes us into account pit times and variants of tires falling off or flats, or it's just not this guy's week, or, I don't know. But it's been, not going to cover it up. It's been disappointing. Especially since we were very good last year, very hot to start the year last year. I think we had, 10 straight races where somebody won at least $1,000. And this year, that hasn't happened. So I don't really know exactly where it's going wrong. Because, I feel like no matter which one of us does the playbook or does the lead on the research, we're both pretty well on good plays.
And then I just think that, it also just sucks in general because we're coming off a week where there was a ton of variance at a road course, which normally isn't the case.
Right.
Like the optimal lineup left $7,100 on the table. And it was about, there was a 40-point difference between the optimal lineup and what actually took down DraftKings' big GPP. Like that.
Was it 40 or was it higher?
It could have been 40 to 50 or something. I thought it was at least 40. It could have been more.
Yeah, I thought what took down
there,
the GPP
there was a
was
sizable
like,
gap between the optimal and what took it down.
Yeah, the optimal I think was 326 or something, and somebody took down the $15 GPP with a 241 or 250.
Yeah.
Which is a huge, you're talking, if it's an 80-point difference, that's a third of the points, like, that somebody took it down with, added on. So you're only at 75% of the optimal, which is a very large difference. Yeah, I don't know. It feels like every week you've got to basically try to play a plate track strategy.
I've almost started just making two lineups every week for the Chrome Horn that make absolutely no sense.
Yeah.
And it's only $4 per lineup, but it's like, you know, I got to try something different. And I'm trying to limit, I'm really trying to focus on my exposures, because a lot of times early in the season, I was getting way too careless and being way too overweight on chalky drivers. And I really am trying to, the past few weeks, just be much more disciplined with, you know, setting my exposure limits to maybe 35% tops. But we push forward.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's four races left in the regular season for the Cup Series. Then the playoffs begin. And obviously every driver is still playable in the playoffs. That doesn't really change for DFS. There's a little bit more strategy involved in the playoff guys in terms of how they're going for things and whatnot. But yeah, I don't know. Because if you bank on guys showing up in practice and then being good in the race, that hasn't always worked out. If you go based off of track history at comparable tracks for that season, that hasn't always worked out. So it's kind of like, you know, you just got to throw the narrative out the window sometimes, because I like to build lineups based off of trying to envision what happens during the race. Like, here's a storyline throughout the race. This guy's going to lead early, and then there's going to be some pit stops, and then maybe some things get shuffled back and it takes the guy a little bit to get back up to the front or whatnot. But it seems like the lineups that hit most of the time are the ones that don't necessarily have a narrative, or their narrative is pure chaos and they're hitting all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we got to go with the Joker lineup instead of the Dark Knight.
Well, let's start discussing Michigan, because admittedly, not my favorite race on the schedule, although this was the track a few years ago where I had my first big hit on NASCAR DFS. Yes. But since then,
I crushed it in the first of the two Michigan races like 3 years ago.
But since then, not my favorite race. It's not that I necessarily have gone back to sucking at this track. I just haven't really cared for the quality of racing, although who knows? The next gen car really showed up at Auto Club, and it's looked pretty good on like the non-drafting mile and a half this year.
Yeah, agreed. It's made intermediates way more entertaining. And also, the last couple of years in Michigan, they've had back-to-back. They've had doubleheader races here, much like they had at Pocono. So that kind of took a little bit of the luster off of the racing, because the back half of that race was just about positioning yourself for the next day. That's obviously not the case this year. There's only one Michigan race. This is the only time they're going to go to Brooklyn, Michigan, in the middle of the Irish Hills. But yeah, I would say that the comparable tracks, clearly Auto Club is comparable. It's 2 miles. The tire wear here is not anywhere close to what it is at Auto Club. But it is a 2 mile D-shaped oval. The banking is also steeper here than it is at Auto Club, which means there's a lot more speed in this track than there typically is at Auto Club. We could compare Kansas to it a little bit. You could compare Vegas to it. Charlotte compares pretty well to it. Those are generally the ones that compare based on the next-gen car. So, I don't know. I feel like this week is going to be a very true test of speed for the teams.
All right.
And there's new tires.
Yeah, this is a brand-new tire combination, right? They have not run this
set. They have not run it at any point this year except in a tire test.
Wonderful.
Here, which I think had three drivers at it. I think Logano was one, Austin Dillon was one, and there was another guy at that tire test. Let me go to J-Ski real quick and check it, because they had mentioned that on the Goodyear tire notes there. Bubba. Yeah, Bubba was at the tire test. Austin Dillon and Joey Logano were at the tire test here in the end of May into the beginning of June. So, Yeah.
All right. Just two races this weekend. F1 is in its summer break. The trucks are off, which seems like the trucks have been racing almost every weekend for 2.5 months. But we get Xfinity on Saturday, Cup on Sunday. It's a loaded Saturday for the NASCAR schedule. They have Xfinity practice and qualifying early in the morning, and then I think they have ARCA after that. And then Cup practice and qualifying is after that, and then the Xfinity race, and then the ARCA race. I don't know why the ARCA race is after the Xfinity race. That should never be the case, in my opinion. But we march forward. My Xfinity playbook will be up Saturday morning before practice and qualifying, and then I will try to have updates during and after qualifying. So hopefully a finalized playbook and probably just core plays. That'll be up by noon on Saturday. If I'm feeling special or if I'm feeling good about the lineups that I'm building, I'll throw in example lineups. But I'm also on the Cup playbook this week.
You are. I have family in town this weekend, so you have graciously taken over the Cup playbook for that. I will still do the projections probably Saturday evening, I would imagine. And then Dan will have the core plays or example lineups, whichever he feels best about for the Cup race on Sunday as well. One thing to note, though, with the ARCA practice coming between Xfinity and Cup, is that ARCA runs a different tire. So the rubber on those tires are different. So the first group for Cup practice is going to put out some very interesting times because they're going to be running on ARCA rubber. The second group in practice for Cup is probably going to run faster. So just be conscious of that. Don't say, oh, everybody in the second practice was definitely faster than everybody in the first practice, because it's going to depend on tire rubber that's on the track. Weather for this weekend is supposed to be in the mid-80s basically all weekend there, and I saw last time I checked there was less than a 40% chance of rain on both days, so hopefully that's avoided this week.
All right, let's dig in. Chase Elliott, prior to last week, was on one hell of a run with, you could make the argument that he had three-ish wins in his last five races. Finished 16th on a road course. Very weird, but it was just one of those races. But he's the most expensive driver on the slate, followed by his teammate, Kyle Larson. We get five drivers priced 10K or above. Three of them are Chevys, the other two being Kyle Busch and Denny Hamlin. Who is the top spend-up option in this range? I can't imagine why it would be Denny Hamlin.
Yeah, I don't know, man. That guy just doesn't have speed. Like, I don't get it. Yes, he won at Pocono. Okay, but he started on the pole and won it. Had 16 fastest laps and 21 laps led in a 200-lap race. Or 160-lap race, sorry. So he only led 12% of the laps from the pole on a track where the pole usually does well. I don't know. It's pretty interesting to me that Denny is this high again. Yes, he won at Charlotte. We said that's a comparable track. He didn't do so well at he was only okay at Kansas. So I'm not sure why he's that high. But to me, I got to say Ross Chastain's probably the payup.
Probably, if we're just going off what we saw at... putting a lot of emphasis? Yeah, because, I mean, he's been fast everywhere. Good point. But, I mean, he looked good at Auto Club earlier this year. A lot of the mile and a half, so, like, that car has just always shown up with speed. I guess, I don't know. He's just becoming, like, an easy play every week for either PD, if he qualifies poorly, or, you know, he's a contender for Dominator points.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm fine paying the 10K for Chastain. I'm not fine paying 10-3 for Denny unless he absolutely blows the socks off the place. So, you know, the last time we saw Denny be really quick, they were disqualified for cheating. So it's kind of hard to imagine they can find that speed again and make it legal. Kyle Larson, I mean, he does have a very good history here. He did win here quite a lot early in his career. In fact, Chase Elliott finished second to him three times in a row here.
Didn't he win this race earlier? Or he won Auto Club earlier in the year, right?
Yeah.
Granted, he didn't have the best car.
Yeah, he won Auto Club. It was kind of, I mean, he still led 28 laps out of a 200-lap race. That's okay. But, I mean, yeah, he did well there. He did well at Vegas. My only complaint about Larson is he seems to be doing well but not dominating races.
Yeah, that's a good assessment.
I mean, he dominated. Can you say he dominated the Coke 600 when he led 51 laps?
Well, I think we've talked about this before.
I mean, he led 51 of basically 200 laps because you have to start his race.
He had an awful first half of the race.
His car literally caught fire. Yeah. And then, by the way, speaking of catching fire, Chris Busher caught fire.
Yeah. He was two laps down.
Two laps down with like, what, 20 to go or something and somehow finished 10th.
Yeah.
Like,
so that if your car catches fire, that's actually a good thing.
Yeah, used to knock Kyle Larson out of the Texas races, and now it helps him dominate races. So I don't know. Look, if I was ranking the guys over 10K, it'd probably be Chastain 1, Chase 2. Then it's a toss-up between the Kyles and Denny. I'm just not enthused about a 10-3.
I think I can get pretty excited about Kyle Busch. I'm not enthused or interested in Hamlin. Probably not going to be very excited about Truex either. But Kyle Busch, like, he's got speed. I mean, there's still the storylines regarding his contract and, you know, will he be back with JGR? Does he end up at SHR? But Kyle Busch has shown up with speed. I mean, only has the win on Bristol dirt. But, you know, if he can get the solid finish, which we haven't seen lately, like, that's been a big issue for him. You know, he finished second.
Pocono.
Yeah, Pocono. Man, well,
technically.
I tell you, I cannot remember the tracks anymore.
Technically, he finished second because he was also DQ'd at Pocono. Yeah. So, technically second.
But aside from that.
Yeah, you have to go back to Gateway to find his last top 10 finish.
So, kind of all over the place, but I still feel best about, among the Toyotas and everyone in this range, aside from Chase and Ross, I feel best about Kyle Busch. Not too interested in Truex. The price tag on Reddick is really jumping.
Well, I mean, he's won two of the last, right?
Yeah, but there were road courses. And granted,
okay, but he finished fourth at Pocono.
Well, I was mostly going to go off of the fact that this car was dominant at Auto Club earlier in the year. And I understand, like, I don't want to put too much weight into Auto Club because the tire wear is, it's night and day between Auto Club and Michigan. But I also just think, like, it's a 2 mile track. I think that this is the kind of track where he could have success. Is this the kind of track that he can run the high line, or does it not really matter?
I mean, there are kind of multiple grooves, but it doesn't necessarily matter. I mean, he'll make one of the grooves work for him for sure. Yeah, I mean, look, Reddick has been really fast a lot of places. But I also feel like he's either going to be really fast and get a good finish, or he's going to wreck out pretty quickly. Like, he's kind of, if you look at his, so he's got 10 top 10s this year, two wins, and his average finish is 16.3. That kind of tells you all you need to know about that. Now, one of those, I guess it's, okay, so one of the top 10s is in the duel, so that doesn't really count. So 9 top 10s is what we're going with here. So, look, 9 top 10s, 2 wins, and an average finish of 16.3 kind of tells you he's either going to do really well or he's going to crash out pretty quickly. But, yeah, I mean, I'm fine with the 9,700 based on his speed. That's 300 less than it was at
Do we go back to the well with Ryan Blaney this week?
God, hoping, I don't know.
Hoping he finally gets a win. It's 1 year before.
Right, but so here's the interesting issue with Michigan for the playoff bubble. And this, I believe, was a tweet from Bob Pockers, if I'm not mistaken. In the last 9 Michigan races, the winner of that of those 9 races have already had wins earlier in the year. No driver has gotten their first win of the season at Michigan in the last 9 trips to Michigan. So
I guess that makes sense because it's so deep in the schedule.
That doesn't bode well for Blaney, but he's done well here before. I don't know, man. There's something tantalizing about that speed and the fact that, you know, it used to be owned by Penske and Ford is right down the road. Usually the Ford drivers make it a very big weekend here that they don't want to lose out. So there is that going in his favor, but, man, I don't know.
I saw on DK Sportsbook yesterday that the Fords were getting like basically plus 425 to win.
Like any Ford?
Yeah. And like Chevy was at, I think, plus 110, and I think Toyota was at plus 150. Okay. Don't quote me on that, but I remember the Fords were the longest, and I thought it was pretty tempting.
Yeah, 17-4. I'm looking right now, and it's 17-4 for Ford to win. So 17 divided by 4 is
4.25.
4.25.
Plus 4.25, yeah.
And they are the longest. I mean, Chevy is even, and Toyota is plus 150.
Yeah.
I understand why, right? Because Fords in general have shown the least amount of speed of the three, but you'd have to assume that this is going to be a race weekend that they want to show up for. And typically this year, when we least expect the Fords to show up is when they show up.
I guess we can just round out the rest of Penske. Joey Logano's 8,800. I don't know. I think I'm okay with the price tag, but it really depends on where he starts because I don't know how that guy has 2 wins on the year. I mean, he finished 6th last week, but then it was 4 straight finishes outside the top 20.
Yeah.
Haven't really loved the speed. I really am much more interested in Austin Cindric, who finished 2nd last week. Has just been running better overall, and I like what I'm seeing out of that car. And he's still, you know, just under 8K when, you know, from June to July, we were seeing top 10 speed out of that car.
Yeah, I would agree. My only thing with Logano is he did do the tire test here earlier, so he does have a little bit of familiarity with this car on those tires at this track. But again, Goodyear's going to share that data with everybody, so only he knows how it feels compared to the data that for whatever everybody else sees. But I'm kind of with you. If they're starting in similar spots, I'd rather save the money and go with Cindric.
All right. Sticking in the mid-range, Kevin Harvick, 8,400, which is a pretty nice price tag for a guy that can just easily go out there and get a top 10. Alex Bowman, 8,200. He is only $100 more than Eric Jones, which is kind of crazy. But Bowman's had a very, very rough stretch. Hasn't had a top 10 since the Coke 600 in Charlotte. And 4 of his last 6 finishes have been outside the top 30. Now, he's had some bad luck with some pretty unfortunate wrecks. But it's been a rough stretch since he backed into his win a few months ago.
Yeah. Actually,
like 5 months ago.
Yeah, back in March. you know that I like Eric Jones, but at this price tag, there's no justifying playing Alex Bowman over Eric Jones right now.
It's his home track, though.
Yeah. It's Eric Jones's home track, yes.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I'd rather play Eric Jones.
Oh, okay. I got you.
Basically the same price tag. There's no justifying playing Alex Bowman over Eric Jones. Okay. Based on
and plus, was it announced last week or the week before that Jones is coming back to Petty next season?
It was one of the. It was pretty recently. That I think it was before Pocono, maybe. Mm-hmm. That it was announced that he's coming back. So He's got that behind him, and he's racing like it, because in the last four races, he's finished 19th or better, with three of them being 15th or better. And he's gotten all sorts of PD in most of those races.
Yeah.
Like, at Pocono, started 34th, finished 11th. At Quaker State, which was Atlanta, started 25th, got 4th. Yes, it's a plate track, but still, that's pretty impressive. Indy Road, yeah, it was chaos, but he avoided it and moved up 20 spots. So, you know, I like Erik Jones. I think the price tag, yes, it's going up. I think there's good reason for it. He did finish third at Auto Club earlier this year. And ran respectively. Like, he started second, finished third, had 23 fastest laps, and led 18. So it wasn't, like, a shock that he finished top three. Mm. So, yeah, that price tag, I don't see why you wouldn't take the shot on Jones over Bowman, given their recent luck.
We've already touched on Austin Cindric. Chase Briscoe, I think he's just kind of turning back into Chase Briscoe. Has top 10 upside, but always kind of tough to gauge. But Bubba Wallace has been fantastic recently.
Yeah.
Last week at Indy Road Course, his best career finish on a road course, and he was ecstatic about it.
He should be. Like,
two top five finishes in his last three races and three straight top tens. Like, he's been very consistent.
Yeah, and he's run. Now, I will say some of these bad finishes aren't entirely his fault, right? A lot was made of the pit crew, mm-hmm. which now seems to be settled because they swapped Seabell's and his, and that seems to have done the trick because it won Seabell a race, and then it's gotten Bubba three straight top tens. But I will say at Kansas, if that's a comparable track, which we consider it to be, he was very, very fast at that race. He passed everybody and their mother like four times and finished top 10. He ran pretty well at Auto Club. I know that's only the second race of the year, but it is comparable in terms of distance, so he ran pretty well there. I have really no problem paying this for it. He's shown the consistency. The Toyotas are finding speed. And if we believe in the other Toyotas, why wouldn't we believe in this one? So, yeah, that's kind of... I'm fine with it. Again, would I be... Look, I think the ideal starting spot for him is somewhere in the mid-teens.
Still getting some leverage?
Yeah, you're still getting leverage because people aren't going to think that, oh, it's Bubba, he can't do it again, right? And so they're going to just look for the guy starting behind him or like that are in the same price bracket. So ideally that would be a good starting spot for him if you want leverage over the field.
I can't imagine we're going to be super excited about Austin Dillon unless he's offering some PD, but the Roush Fenway Keselowski drivers are up next. Chris Buescher, 7,100. Brad Keselowski, 6,900, nice on his home track. I'm coming around. I know Keselowski is still a bit of a wild card and more of a GPP play, but we've seen on multiple occasions that he can hit 40-plus points, and at this price tag, I'm on board with that for GPPs. Can't really trust him enough for cash games, but Buescher's been getting a lot of hype. Keselowski's been giving him a lot of credit and talking him up in the media and saying that he's one of the more underrated drivers in the series.
He's in the middle of a career year.
Yeah, like it's been a very great year for Buescher. I know we've debated these two before, and I think we settle on Buescher as probably the safer play, but I'm liking how they're both trending. And Keselowski, I remember when he was getting crapped on earlier in the year about his poor start. You know, he was clapping back on social media and saying that, you know, in his first year at Penske, I think it took, you know, a while until they got a top 10, took even longer until they got a top five. And I think it took, I don't even think he got a win in his first season with Penske. So, you know, like Rome isn't built in a day, but I like the progress that I've just been seeing out of RFK, as long as the cars are running clean and we're not getting a ton of variance.
Right. If they can keep them clean, they've had speed in these cars, right? Yeah. That seems to be Kansas. He ran very well, finished top 14. Keselowski, that is, at Vegas, it was okay. I think he got trapped back late. Auto Club, I think there was an issue late in that one. Again, tire wear was, although it was very beginning of the year, we all know how bad Roush was at the start of the year. So for Kez, we're going mostly on what we've seen lately, which is more consistent speed. And again, I will probably lean towards having more Buescher than Kez, but the home track, and yes, it is a home track for Keselowski. He does want to win at his home track because no Michigander has ever won at Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Is that what they're called, Michiganders?
Yes. Unless you're from the Upper Peninsula and then you're a Uper. Yeah. That was geography facts with Matt Sells. But my concern with that is if it gets late, he might push to try to make a move to win, and it may not go in his favor is my only concern with Kez. Because we've seen late race pushes not work so well for him elsewhere, like Daytona last year.
Dipping below Kez, we're entering this very interesting tier of drivers under 7K, and you could make an argument for a lot of them. I'm actually, and I'll just list them off. Eric Almirola, 6,800. Ricky Stenhouse Jr., 6,700, who has six top tens on the year, and I want to say this is a track that can play to his strengths. Ty Gibbs is 6,600, and we know he's in the 45 again. You know, still getting his feet wet. But he does have a pair of top 20s in the first two races that he subbed in for Kurt Busch. Michael McDowell, 10 top 10s on the season, which is
career best for him, too.
I mean, that's more than Eric Jones, Kurt Busch, but Kurt's missed a few races. Cindric, Dylan, Buescher, Hamlin, Byron. Incredible year for Michael McDowell. I mean, this range, this 6K range, I mean, we're getting a Cup Series debut from Austin Hill. Cole Custer probably on the outs is 6,200. I think people are done entertaining the idea of playing Cole Custer. Yeah. But just a loaded range of pretty good value plays here.
Yeah, Harrison Burton. By the way, Ty Dillon in the comparable tracks this year has finished between 13th and 20th in all of them.
Okay.
So there's that. We get Gragson back again. We get, you know, Austin Hill, I don't know how well he's run in lower series. It is a third RCR car.
Let me check.
I don't know if we, like, are we trusting the equipment or are we trusting the drivers more with RCR? Because it feels like we're making a pretty distinct thing that we're trusting the drivers more. Because we like Reddick, but we don't like Dillon, and they're ostensibly in the same equipment.
So I don't know. I feel like Reddick's probably the only RCR driver that I would want any interest or exposure to.
Right. I think Austin Hill is going to just try to keep the car clean in his Cup Series debut.
He did win the Truck Series race here back in 2019, finished 12th here in 2020 and 19th in 2018. Obviously has not raced the Xfinity Series at Michigan yet.
Right. So it's a pretty steep learning curve going from the trucks to the Cup Series because they drive completely differently. Aero on the vehicles is totally different. Driving style, totally different. Now you're talking about the next-gen Cup car. So braking points are different. Throttle is totally different. So I'm not that high on Austin Hill simply because I just don't usually like playing guys in their debuts unless it's Ty Gibbs. But speaking of Ty Gibbs, I think he's going to be pretty popular at 6,600 on DK. Yeah. FanDuel's a little more interesting because he's priced right near Kurt Busch on FanDuel. Right at, like, I think 7,800, and Kurt was, like, 82. So that's a little interesting to me that DK went the cheap route, and we've seen two top 20s from Ty Gibbs.
I will say, it seems like the strategy for Gibbs so far in two Cup races is like they just want to minimize mistakes with him. Like I don't feel like they've been incredibly aggressive in what they're letting him do. And so I'm hoping that, you know, if Kurt's going to keep missing some races, I would like to see the training wheels come off Gibbs a little bit. I understand he's still very young. I don't even think he's 20.
I think you're right. I think he's 19.
Yeah. And so I understand that there's some hesitancy, but I would like to see them maybe let him drive the car a little more. He's two races in. He's as much as we can complain about him being a bit of a brat and, you know, basically just being gifted his seat, like, he is a very good driver. Yes. And I he strikes me as a kid that can learn very fast. And I would like to see just more flexibility in the team and the organization, just letting him, like, just see what he can do. And maybe, I'm not saying he's going to, like, get a win like he did in his Xfinity Series debut, but I would love to see just a top 10. But it's not going to come at low ownership.
No. And this price tag doesn't indicate that he'll be low-owned. I think he'll be one of the more popular guys. I think Eric Almirola is a sneaky good play here this week. I really do. If you go back to early in the year when they raced at Auto Club and Vegas, which are two comparable tracks. Also, he ran well at Kansas. I think he's a sneaky play this week. Also, he's done well at Michigan in the past, too. I'm pretty sure that Eric Almirola was the key to you taking down one of your big pays a few Michigan races ago.
I think it was him and Suarez.
Like, yeah, because he finished back-to-back sixth-place finishes. He's run pretty well at Michigan. So I think a lot of people just have him pegged as a, and for the most part, I've been feeding this narrative too, that he's a short, flat track type guy. But
yeah.
I think being in a Ford, being in a track that he's comfortable at, this could be a sneaky spot for Almirola.
Let's see, August 2020, yeah, finished sixth. It's not his only top 10. Back in 2018, he finished seventh. So I think there's some appeal there. Cole Custer, not interested.
No.
I don't know. Just, I have a hard time just getting off Justin Haley. I understand, like, he's not breaking the slate, but if you look at his DraftKings profile, he's rarely killing you. I mean,
yep.
In his last three races, and granted, at 5,900, he's not hitting immense value, but 23 points, 26, 28, 57, 28. You know, he does have some 30 and 40 point performances on the year. And it's a big track. I feel like this is a track that if the college cars can find the same speed that they had earlier in the year. I mean, we've said it a couple times, like, Haley just shows up with an absolute rocket at practice, and I could see it happening this weekend.
Agreed. I'm still on the Todd Father train with Todd Gilliland.
Yeah, I get that. That price tag is too cheap.
He dropped.
Yeah, that's stupid.
He went down $200 on DK from a top four finish at Indy Road last week. Like, he's cheaper than he was when he finished 27th at Pocono. He's, like, way cheaper than he was when he pulled off a top 17 at Atlanta. It's just insane. Like, if you go back to, he's almost $1,000 cheaper than he was at Auto Club when he started 26th and finished 20th.
Yeah.
And Vegas started 30th, finished 23rd. He was 5,400. He's cheaper this week than he was then. You know, it's just, I don't know what they're doing with the Todd Father pricing.
well, it's look, just like, it's, because you have to consider, like, what Michael McDowell's doing, because it's the same equipment, and McDowell right. obviously has far more experience and is more likely to rip off the better results. But if we're going to give attention to McDowell at right. 65 with his top 10s, and we have to give some love to Todd Gilliland, he only has two top 10s on the year, and he, granted, one of them was last week where he finished fourth.
Yeah, but he also started ninth, really, so good. It's not yeah. like, it's not like he wasn't up there, like, the whole, it's not like he started 30th and 27 guys wrecked out and he just benefited. Like, yeah, I don't know. I feel like the below 7K is going to be where the slates are won and lost.
Yeah, and it all depends on where everyone practices and qualifies as well.
Right. Obviously, there could wind up being some chalk plays down here. If somebody spits the bit in qualifying and gives you all sorts of PD, then, you know, we're, you know, looking to chalk down here, especially to go get. I don't even think you need, like, two high-priced guys. I think it's a pretty interesting slate.
Well, how many laps are there for this race?
There are 200 laps.
So that's a max of 140 dominators. I mean, most of my builds are probably going to be spending up for a couple Dominators.
Yeah, now, I wouldn't expect
go ahead.
Too many cautions. I mean, I know it's a new tire, but I think we're far enough into the year that people know not to put the PSI too far down and blow tires, and tire wear isn't a massive concern here.
Right.
And we haven't really seen a tire fall off in the last few races. So I think they're getting better about that too. So I don't know. Normally Michigan is a relatively clean race. It's usually about who has the most pure speed for the long run. So I think this is a pretty interesting pricing slate for, because there's multiple places to go at each $1,000 increment, and that makes it pretty interesting to build from.
Yeah, I have to familiarize myself with the FanDuel pricing this week, because I did the examples last week, and it was my first time even logging on to FanDuel, I want to say, in probably 3 months.
Yeah, I still get emails every time I log on to FanDuel because their security is nuts. But yeah, I mean, FanDuel pricing is kind of a free-for-all because you can generally fit like four dudes over 10,000 without an issue, because there, I mean, you can fit basically every, if you average 10,000 a dude, you can fit the lineup. So there's,
it's always almost, so like you can, last week when I was building lineups for the examples, like it just seemed, it was just easy. And granted, the race went to crap and like neither, none of the lineups like cashed, but I almost felt better leaving money on the table than trying to spend every dollar that FanDuel allows you.
Right. Because you're like, well, I really like, I don't know, let's just say Harrison Burton or Ty Dillon, for example. Ty Dillon's always in like the $4,000 range on FanDuel.
Yeah.
Your average driver salary on FanDuel is 10,000. So if you play Ty Dillon, you can get two dudes that are like 13,000 without any issue. I mean, hell, if you play a $7,000 probably Erik Jones, you can get two $13,000 dudes. Like, the pricing on FanDuel is a little ridiculous, in my opinion. But it has been since they came out with the sport. And so, yeah, I'm with you. It's all about more so what can you leave on the table and feel good about on FanDuel than trying to spend every last dime and pack it full of the bigger name dudes.
Any drivers or strategies that we missed? I feel like that was kind of a good summary of everything. I mean, granted, everything's going to change tomorrow when we find out where everyone's starting.
Yeah, I would say, so you're going to want a lap sled dominator. Usually at Michigan, it's one guy that leads a good chunk of the laps, and then everybody else kind of follows in behind him. If you're looking back at data, I would not look back at the last couple of Michigan trips because they were double headers and they did the inversion, so it's going to throw off average finishes and who got to lead laps and who didn't and all that good stuff. But typically speaking, it's usually a clean race. Not a ton of cautions at Michigan. So yeah, it's kind of your standard intermediate strategy where we're going to kind of go with one dominator and then we're going to go with guys that can finish relatively well. As for the passing, I don't really know how well the passing is going to work here. Like, we've seen passing be great at most of the intermediates. But Michigan can be a different animal when that, you know, compared to other intermediates, usually speaking. So we'll see. It might be a race in which you get like three or four or five cars just run away from everybody else. But that happens sometimes. Sometimes students show up with the best papers and they just dominate everybody else. Right? Like, we see it in every other form of sports. So yeah, that's kind of the strategy I would hold
it on. All right. Well, good stuff as always, Matt. Thank you for your time. Best of luck to you and best of luck to the FA Nation at Michigan.